Welcome, welcome, Mushroom Family, to another episode of Mushroom Revival Podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to bridging the gap between you, our lovely, beautiful, amazing listeners, and the wonderful, wacky world of fungi. Usually, we interview experts from all over the world, and we get them on our show to talk about mushrooms, but this is a special episode where it's just going to be me and Lyra talking about cordyceps.
In this episode, we discuss the celebrity zombie fungus, Ophiocordyceps unilateralis. Its latest trending appearance being in The Last of Us Part 2, which is an apocalyptic video game where this fungus has evolved to infect human beings. This was produced by the Naughty Dog for PlayStation, and the first version came out in 2013, was remastered in 2014, and just about 5 days ago, Part 2 was released, and it's a hot topic.
So, full disclosure, we have never played this video game. I don't think I ever planned to, but I have watched a lot of videos online, I've read articles, and it really started because we are cordyceps growers. We are obsessed with cordyceps, and whenever we would post about our cordyceps grows or a cordyceps tincture or anything to do with cordyceps, we would get so many comments on our social media about The Last of Us and people commenting, maybe they played the first game and they said, oh, you know, this is how The Last of Us starts. I played this video game. I know about cordyceps. And really the whole premise of the video game is that this cordyceps infection breaks out and it's kind of this terrorist group that purposely infects the world and wipes out 60% of the world. So people are a little freaked out and we thought it was so funny that people were commenting this that we had to know what they were talking about. So we did our research and actually, one The Last of Us podcast reached out to us and wanted to interview us on this topic, and it ended up not working out because of time zone restrictions, but we decided we wanted to just do an episode ourselves about it. So this has been a hot topic, new game, and apparently really high critic reviews, but very terrible customer reviews. I just read an article. Apparently people are... I won't give any spoilers away, but we're just going to talk about the mycology aspect of this video game and how realistic cordyceps are in a zombie apocalypse, and can they infect humans? Is this realistic? How spot on is this game? And talk about the fungus that this video game highlights, which is specifically Ophiocordyceps unilateralis. So in the game, this Ophiocordyceps unilateralis is, and forgive me, I've never played the video game, so maybe I'll mess up some facts here, but the world becomes infected, and during the game, there's a newspaper article that maybe it came from contaminated crops in South America. The infection is transmitted by breathing in spores or through bodily fluids. And this whole infection takes place in 7 different distinct phases. So the first phase is incubation. And that's the phase where this infection, Ophiocordyceps unilateralis, travels to the brain between 1 to 2 days. And the people start to display erratic or violent behavior. The next phase after the incubation phase is the runner phase. So that's when these infected people run and attack people. They moan and they yell. And something that a lot of people don't know about is if they are conscious and trying to actually fight the infection, or if they are totally taken over by the fungi and they have no control over their actions. So the next phase after the runner phase is the stalker phase. And this is when mushrooms grow out of the people and actually breaks through their eye sockets. So they start using echolocation because they can't see, and they start to only use grunts and sounds to get around. The next phase is the clicker phase, and this is when people are completely blind and use clicks as echolocation to travel around, as their sole means of transportation. The next phase after clickers would be bloaters, and this takes a decade to grow. So these are people that have been affected for over 10 years, and they carry bombs that they have that have spores in them, and they throw the bombs at people to try to infect them. The next phase after bloater is shambler. So they run at you and explode in an acid cloud. Now, after this is the death of the person. So they die, and the quote-unquote fungal plant comes out of them, so the actual mushroom, and the spores get released, and that's what you don't want to breathe. People grow better in cool, dark, moist environments and slow down in warm, bright, dry environments. So I guess part of the video game is that any building that's really dark and moist is where you should probably avoid getting infected. And if you're out in the sun, then you're fine.
Hopefully. They did their homework on that part.
That's kind of the life cycle of the cordyceps infection in the game The Last of Us. So we're just going to talk about how spot on is this, and did they do the research?
Can cordyceps infect humans currently? No, at least not yet. In fact, the handful of cases of mushrooms that do grow on human flesh were not a cordyceps species, but were actually Schizophyllum commune. And this fungus has fruited mushrooms from the soft palates of immunocompromised children, and in one case, inside of a human lung. It's also alarming to think of this statistic, where over 300 million people are affected by serious fungal diseases worldwide, and an estimated 1.6 million deaths are attributed to fungal disease annually. There are about 600 species of fungi that have ever caused infection in humans, but only 30 that cause regular disease. None of those are cordyceps. One feature we had on our podcast with Mahmoud Ghanoum, he and his colleagues identified a variable zoo of fungal colonists in the mouths of 20 study participants. So they reported 101 fungal species, with each person harboring between 9 and 23 strains. So fungi are already in us. They're already living on us and in us, and it's not always a bad thing.
So we get a lot of responses that, you know, people are terrified of this actually happening, and they're like, how could you grow Cordyceps militaris? This is so scary. It's gonna start The Last of Us. But if you actually look at the science, you know, we have hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of species of fungi living in symbiosis with our bodies every day. Sure, there are fungi like Candida, and every, you know, once in a very, 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 very blue moon, we have fungi like Schizophyllum commune that will fruit on someone, and, you know, it's super rare. So I think this video game is really producing a lot of fear that, is it justified? For the most part, no. But, you know, some terrorist organization could maybe develop a strain that might do this. I would be more concerned with a virus and not a species of fungi. And this kind of reminds me of the death suit. So this was a TED Talk in 2011 by J. Rim Lee, and it's called The Infinity Burial Suit. And so basically it was this radical idea, this TED Talk, that she was going to put people in these suits infected with fungi. And when they die, they're going to be eaten by mushrooms. And it was such a radical notion for so many people, you know, what? I'm going to be eaten by mushrooms. How gross, how extreme, how radical. But really, you know, it's not that radical. And this process actually happens when our bodies are buried into the ground. And so this relationship between fungi, not only living in symbiosis with human bodies, but actually decaying human bodies, is not that far off. Now, J. Rim Lee, she actually started a company. It's spelled C-O-E-I-O. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And had her first volunteer, who is a 63-year-old man in Massachusetts with a terminal illness, who quoted Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he said, Neil said, "I would request that my body in death be buried, not cremated, so that the energy content contained within it gets returned to the earth, so that flora and fauna can dine upon it, just as I have dined upon flora and fauna during my lifetime." So we're really digging in to something more philosophical, a lot deeper, which is most people in United States especially are really afraid of nature and really afraid of biodiversity. And we have this separatist ideology that we are not only separate from nature and separate from everything around us, but germs are gross and dirt is gross, mushrooms are gross, fungi is gross. And part of the reason why we launched this podcast was to really dispel a lot of that childhood mycophobia that a lot of people have, and really get nitty gritty into the science, into cool facts, and bridge the gap between the two worlds. So let's dig a little deeper into the star of The Last of Us video game, which is Ophiocordyceps unilateralis, and talk about what it's like in the wild.
So who is Ophiocordyceps unilateralis? It's definitely the textbook zombie fungus, and it was discovered in 1859 by the British naturalist Alfred Russel Wallace. It's an insect pathogenic fungus, or entomopathogenic, and one clever term I've been seeing tossed around the internet is homopathogenic. So this is a new term adopted for fungi that graduate into eating human beings or homo sapiens. It's definitely clever, but not used within the scientific community, or at least I have found no literature that uses that term sincerely. And this looks, I mean, if you Google just plain old cordyceps, you would likely find this fungus as the number one result. It looks like a stalk or a little stick with a textured ball, which is the spore sac that's pierced through it. And most of the images you see online are actually upside down. So the host is on the underside of the leaf of the branch and not on top, which is how the orientation appears to be in your image search. So in the wild, the mushroom grows downward towards its other victims. O unilateralis, which is just a shorter way of saying Ophiocordyceps unilateralis, infects the Camponotini tribe, which is also known as the carpenter ant. The fungus may also parasitize other closely related species of ants with lesser degrees of host manipulation and reproductive success, but it does tend to try other hosts. What does a normal infection look like? This is a morbid story, but it starts with the spore, of course, and it's picked up from the forest floor, it's ingested, or it just rains down onto the surface of its host. And when contact is detected, the spore begins to germinate, and it releases enzymes like lipase, chitinase, and protease to breach the exoskeleton. In this stage, the fungus is hyphal and filamentous, and once it breaks in, the fungus gets into the hemocoel, which is the term used to describe the main cavity of the invertebrate. And now it switches strategies. It is no longer mycelial. The fungus proceeds by growing as a free-living yeast cell until it has colonized the entire cavity. There's some pictures that will be in the show notes, actually, within the papers, and you can see the yeast cells between the muscle fibers of these ants, and it's pretty eerie to compare a non-infected muscle tissue with an infected muscle tissue and see like just how much it has completely destroyed the whole matrices of it. As it's growing into the bug, the fungus produces nerve toxins to alter the behavior of the ant, And about 10 days after infection, it will make its way up the tree or plant.
So in layman's terms, it basically takes control. A lot of people think it infects the brain and makes it into kind of a zombie to do its bidding, but it actually takes control of its muscles and drugs it up and kind of plays it like a puppet.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some stats about the height, which was surprisingly lower to the ground than I had thought. But these researchers were finding that most of these infected ants were found at approximately 25 centimeters off the ground, give or take 3 centimeters. And yeah, that's not that high, but...
Yeah, and I found a ton in Ecuador, and this was about, I feel like this was 2015 or 2016. And I was at a research station in a national park in Ecuador, and it was unbelievable the amount of infected ants I found in such a small area. And what happened is I feel like one ant got infected the rest of the colony, and it was just this graveyard of so many different ants, and they're all over the place. And it's funny because this big tree that was the main portion of the ant graveyard, they were all crawling up these vines that were growing on the tree. And so the ones that made it up further definitely clasped onto a vein of the leaf and were hanging upside down, but there were so many others that you saw all the different stages of their climb. And so some lower down on the tree, and some in the middle, and then some on the leaf, and some, you know, they didn't have the energy to make it all the way up, so they bit on the vine of the tree. But this was incredible, and I'm pretty bummed. I told this story, I think, in the first podcast episode that we've ever done, but I collected, I feel like, over 50 specimens of all different types of cordyceps, ophiocordyceps, entomopathogenic fungi, and I accidentally lost all the specimens before I left. But I've heard Ophiocordyceps unilateralis even being found in North Carolina, which is really interesting. And I hope that we can find it in more places in the U.S. It's a really cool mushroom. And if you want to see this whole process, I would type in Google BBC Planet Earth cordyceps, and you can watch the whole infection and really high-def videography. It's awesome.
Plus dozens of other cordyceps species. So back to our morbid story of how this actually flushes out. Once the conditions are favorable, so they've gotten that sweet spot of height, and it's a good humidity, it's a good temperature, and they're right in line with where they want their spores to fall, then the ant's mandibles are secured to that leaf vein or branch. So atrophy settles in, the muscle tissues are completely destroyed, and the mitochondria begins to die as well as the ant. And at this point, the ant's no longer able to control any of its muscles or mandibles and remains fixed in this place. This lockjaw trait is popularly known as the death grip, and it's essential to the fungus's life cycle. The ant slowly dies, and depending on weather conditions and environments, a mushroom will be produced anywhere from 4 to 10 days. The fruiting body generally fruits from the ant's head using mechanical pressure and, of course, more fungal enzymes to rupture through its exoskeleton, while also secreting antimicrobials to ward off competition. Finally, there's the post-mortem dissemination. These sporulating cadavers will rain down spores and allow the cycle to continue. And this fungus ingenuity does not end here. After the spores have fallen, so you give it 24 to 70 hours after being ejected, those spores will germinate and form a secondary spore, which is called a capilloconidiospore. And the picture is interesting. It looks like a a long spore. So these spores aren't balls. They look like sticks. And then it will, if it doesn't find anything to germinate on, it'll produce another stick, which is serving as like another launch pad. And on the tip of that is its Capilla conidiospore, which it has a second chance at launching off into its environment to further infect ants.
Just when you thought it was dead. What do they call it in the second wave?
Yeah.
The second wave of the cordyceps inoculation. So Ophiocordyceps unilateralis have been known to destroy entire ant colonies. As I was describing in Ecuador, it's an amazing sight. It's just, you see them everywhere, and your eye picks up on one, and then you see another one in your peripheral, and then you just zoom out, and you're like, whoa, there are so many of them. And it's this really horrific scene, and you kind of wish you've seen it go down. And I've seen a couple insects that, I've seen two in my life where I know they've been infected with an entomopathogenic fungi. And the reason is that I see the same species of insect acting really weird, crawling really slow, twitching, and all around it on similar leaves, I see its infected brothers and sisters, you know, with the death grip and mushrooms, you know, flying out of their heads. And one day I'm going to get slow-mo video of it actually happening, and it'd be great. But another really cool thing is a search of plant fossil databases revealed similar marks on a fossil leaf from the mesal pit, which is 48 million years old. And so many species of cordyceps, including Tolipocladium ophioglossoides, which grows on a truffle, it actually used to grow on fungi. Or it actually used to grow on insects, but it evolved into jumping kingdoms into now growing on fungi. So this kingdom jumping is not too far off, and for it to now jump to Animalia from insects is, who knows, it might happen.
I've also read some papers about entomopathogenic evolution, and it seems like there's a trend where the fungus is changing its methods and keeping the host alive. So it will do all of its work, it'll sporulate, get what it needs, and the host can live on. I don't know if that's much better for the host, but nonetheless, it's quite a fun fact.
Yeah, actually, entomopathogenic fungi is split into three different segments. And so there's types that only infect dead insects, mm-hmm. which is, they're all morbid. But there's another that infects living insects. They kill them, and then they fruit off their dead bodies. And then there's other ones that will infect living insects, fruit off of them, and then go on and let the insects live. So many different ways to infect them. And, you know, the ants are really adaptive as well. So ants can sense that a member of the colony is infected. And I was just talking about, you know, seeing this infection take place. They act really weird. They start to twitch. Their whole movement is off. And keep in mind that their muscles are being hijacked by this fungus. So obviously they're moving really weirdly. And healthy ants, usually two of them, will carry the dying infected ant far away from the colony, and they'll dig three holes. Why three? One for the infected ant and two for themselves. And they'll actually bury themselves alive to avoid the exposure from the rest of their colony. So it's a suicide mission. And they know, they're like, this is way better than infecting our entire colony because it's so likely to happen.
There's some hope for these ants though, right? The Ophiocordyceps unilateralis actually also has a parasite, So this fungus suffers from an unidentified fungal hyperparasite reported as the anti-zombie fungus, which, according to what I've read, results in only 6-7% of its spores will be viable, which is significant. And it limits the damage of the fungus to the ants and therefore helps the colonies out. The hyperparasite moves in to attack Ophiocordyceps unilateralis as the fungal stalk emerges from the ant's body, which can stop the stalk from releasing its spores.
And this gets into one of my favorite topics, which is, what is a parasite? And this started, you know, I was in Ecuador. I was actually on one of the Galapagos Islands, San Cristobal, and we were doing some restoration work because there's so many invasive species on the Galapagos Islands, and it's so fragile, and these invasives will just take over. So we were replanting native plants and taking out invasives, and one of the plants that we were replanting, this native plant, had a wasp on the leaf that was had the death grip in the vein of the leaf. And it had mushrooms just fruiting all over it. So many mushrooms coming out of the body. And I asked a local, I was like, do you know what this wasp is? And he's like, oh, that's a parasitic wasp. And so there's a parasite infecting the parasite on a native plant that's planted to fight off invasives. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same thing happening. You have a parasite on a parasite, and maybe the ant is also a parasite for something else. So at the end of the day, it's all a matter of perspective and what is the actual parasite. And another thing in The Last of Us video game, I've never played it. I just watched a kind of a gameplay video that gave kind of the story of The Last of Us. And apparently they made a vaccine. Again, I haven't played either the first or the second game, so I don't know what happened with that vaccine. But, you know, it could be this fungal hyperparasite. And I think if I was the game developer, I would make it this other fungi to attack the Last of Us Cordyceps fungi.
Definitely. There's also some serious medical potential for this species. The fungus contains known metabolites as well as several untapped compounds that are reportedly being investigated for its anti-tumor, immunomodulatory, and anti-cancer properties. There are some that are currently being used today. I'm going to butcher this, but there are labs that use this fungus to produce naphthoquinones, which are derivatives from this fungus, and they've shown to be great for anti-malarial drugs, as well as producing red dye for food, cosmetics, and other pharmaceutical manufacturing.
And kind of a cousin of this Ophiocordyceps sinensis, Ophiocordyceps unilateralis, is, well, Ophiocordyceps sinensis, which is used in traditional Chinese medicine for the last 5,000 years. It's the caterpillar fungi. It's also a cousin for Cordyceps militaris, which we grow, which is also another mushroom widely used in traditional Chinese medicine. It's really blowing up in the U.S. as an amazing functional mushroom. So another cousin is Cordyceps subsessilis, and this has been used to derive an immunosuppressant drug used in organ transplants. So its asexual state, known as Tolipocladium inflatum, is famous for cyclosporin. And this is an amazing drug. We actually had a guest on our show. You can actually go to our Tom Volk episode and listen to his experience. He also has a great talk on YouTube all about his experience with his heart transplant and how he got into fungi and studying them.
And for anybody who loves looking at molecular structure, you should definitely go to moleview.com and look up cyclosporine, because it's such a beautiful molecule. Big fan, one of my favorites for sure. And that's not where it ends. So entomopathogenic fungi have major potential, not just unilateralis or Toipocladium, but honestly all of them. And I'm suspicious that it has to do with their own chemical ingenuity. They're extremely strategic and contain a myriad of novel metabolites to get the work done that they're doing, to hijack these bugs, kill them at certain times, to get to a certain height off the ground floor, recognize temperatures and humidities and just all of these super special environmental properties. It's fascinating that they've figured this out. And this has potentially been around for millions of years, as the fossil suggests from the pit that we discussed, the Messel pit. And for this reason, we would be optimistic about getting to know these entomopathogenic fungi, and we should be grateful for their contribution to the world so far.
And this is one of my dreams, you know, once I'm quote-unquote retired, is to travel the world and look for these extremophile fungi and kind of scan them for not only their secondary metabolites, their enzymes, anything that they might be producing that may have a benefit not only for the pharmaceutical industry or the medical industry, but for applications way beyond that. I think fungi are so untapped, and they have so much potential, and they're so wacky and weird and wild, and I'm so excited to study them. And I'm really excited that this video game chose to feature fungi, but it's unfortunate that it has such a bad light that is maybe not as true as I would like it to be portrayed. Although more of the sinister part of me is like kind of wants that to happen. And
I think we talked about this in our spooky mushrooms episode, but are cordyceps making their way to mammals? Well, they've gotten as far as tarantulas.
Who actually built the pyramids? Was it mushrooms? If you want to learn more about cordyceps, you know, we have episode 1, which is the interview with me, and I talk about my journey, and I talk a lot about cordyceps in that episode. We have a Cordyceps 101, where we talk all about cordyceps. And what else? We have Cordyceps and Reishi Genetics with Ryan Paul Gates. We talk about Cordyceps militaris genetics. We have, obviously, any episode that we're talking about medicinal mushrooms. We have one with Robert Rogers, one with Chris Morano, that we're talking about more of the medicinal aspect of cordyceps. We have Cordyceps Around the World with Daniel Winkler, which is an incredible episode. Daniel is awesome and knows his stuff about
super sciencey. So if you liked this one, you might very well enjoy Daniel's.
We had a little bit on the sex life of mushrooms with Willoughby, and we talk a little bit about some entomopathogenic fungi, but not too much. And spooky mushrooms, our Halloween episode, we definitely talk about entomopathogenic fungi because they're super spooky. And The Science and Spirit of Mushrooms with Reishi Strauss. She was working at Bastyr University and did a study with our cordyceps for a couple of years, measuring the cordycepin levels, adenosine in our cordyceps militaris, naturopathic and homeopathic medicine with Dr. Christine Coleman talks about medicinal aspects of cordyceps, as does the medicinal mushrooms episode with Danielle Ryan Broeda from Four Sigmatic. Mycelium versus fruiting bodies with Jeff Shilton talks about a little bit about medicinal cordyceps. And
what about your Cordy Museum and your...
Ooh, yeah, the China episode. And that's another aspect, you know, just talking about, you know, how much further China is along in their mycology, culture, history, education, science, research, is that I went to a talk with someone who grew over 91 different varieties of entomopathogenic fungi, and they have commercial varieties that have already been passed as an approved drug, and species that I've never even heard of. and they've been commercially producing for so many years and doing clinical trials. So it's really awesome, and it really shows how much potential they have as a medicine, but also they do get really weird, and it can be a horror story. The microbiome episode was an amazing one, talking about fungi in the human body. And then the only other one that shows kind of this same line of thinking as The Last of Us is the mycotoxins episode with Dr. Andrew Campbell. And he talks about mycotoxins and the negative effects on our health. And I think instead of this crazy sci-fi, you know, The Last of Us pandemic that can take place, it's really the slow killer, which is moldy houses, moldy basements, having a negative long-term effect on people's health, is really the real Last of Us fungi. So that wraps up another episode of Mushroom Revival Podcast. And as always, we have one final question that we ask all of our guests on the show. And the guest today is Ophiocordyceps unilateralis. And so if Ophiocordyceps unilateralis had the microphone, what would they say?
I think they would say...
So that's another episode. Thank you everyone for tuning in and shrooming in. We love each and every one of you so, so much. Please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Any comments, concerns, questions, any recommendations for future guests or topics that you want us to talk about? We are always here with a big smile on our face and a big welcome to you, because you are part of our mushroom family, reviving the world with mushrooms. Thanks for tuning in. Much love, and may the spores be with you.